The weather is finally getting warmer, so it's time to say goodbye to jackets and sweaters and hello to shorts and tees. I wanted to update my wardrobe for the long haul without spending a fortune. Luckily, I found Quince. Now I've got a lineup of timeless pieces that keep me looking effortlessly chic year after year, like premium European linen dresses, blouses, and shorts from $30. Washable silk tops, timeless 14-karat gold jewelry, and so much more. The best part? All Quince items are priced 50 to 80% less than similar brands. By partnering directly with top factories, Quince cuts out the cost like the middleman that passes the savings on to us. And Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing practices and premium fabrics and finishes. I love that. I am so excited. I have two gorgeous lightweight cashmere sweaters coming my way, one camel, one heather gray. I cannot wait to wear them in the warmer months when it's chilly in LA. Throwing them over my shoulders, going to look so cute. Can't wait. Get warm weather ready with Quince. Go to quince.com/judgingmegan for free shipping on your order and 365-day returns. That's quince.com/judgingmegan to get free shipping and 365-day returns. quince.com/judgingmegan. And now back to the podcast.
Shout out to Claritin for supporting this episode and providing us with samples.
Anyone else feel like they're talking like this time of year and sneezing and coughing and annoying your family while you're watching TV like I'm sure I do?
Well, yeah, I know that I am because my kids tend to tell me. Luckily for those of us who live with these symptoms of allergies, we can live Claritin Clear with Claritin D. Designed for serious allergy sufferers, Claritin D has two powerful ingredients in just one pill that relieve your allergy symptoms and decongest your nose so you can breathe better. This double action combination of prescription strength allergy medicine and the best decongestant available relieves sneezing, a runny nose, itchy and watery eyes, and itchy nose and throat and sinus congestion and pressure with ease in as little as a half an hour, by the way. Ready to live life as if you don't have allergies? It's time to live Claritin Clear. Fast and powerful relief is just a quick trip away. Find Claritin D at the pharmacy counter. Ask for Claritin D at your local pharmacy counter. You don't even need a prescription. Go to Claritin.com right now for a discount so you can live Claritin Clear. Use as directed.
So I talk a lot about how much therapy saved my life and how lucky I am to have my amazing therapist, Dr. Nay. But not everybody can get an appointment with Dr. Nay, and I really wanted to break the stigma on getting help or asking for help. So that is why I partnered with a company called online-therapy.com. They have plans that start around $30 a week, and you can get weekly therapy sessions for less than $50 a week. You can also get my 20% off code by going to my website, judgingmegan.com, and you go to the therapy tab. And if you click on the link at the bottom, you can get 20% off your first month. Well, hello, everyone. You are listening to Judging Megan with your host, Megan Judge. I have the honor of having Diane Foley on the podcast today. She is the mother of freelance journalist James Foley, who died tragically at the hands of ISIS. And it is a true honor to have you on, Mrs. Foley. I keep calling you Mrs. Foley. I don't know why.
Diane.
I'm going to call you Diane. and I'm just honored to have you on. So thank you for coming on today.
My pleasure. Megan.
So I just want to start out and tell my audience how I got the intro to meeting you. I have a friend since seventh grade. Her name is Jean McHugh. And she is pretty much the funniest person I've ever met in my life. I remember meeting Jean at a CYO. We all went to Catholic school, a CYO dance. And she was this teeny tiny little thing. And she was the social coordinator of like everything. And we did cotillion and we became such great friends, and we've remained friends all of these years later. And so I just want to thank Jean so much for introducing us, because she's just funny. She's unbelievable. And I love that she calls everyone Muffin. She's just funny. So I really wanted to kind of get into the interview. And as I kind of told you before we started, all of my interviews are mainly with people that have gone through some sort of trauma and come out the other side. And a lot of my audience are people that might be going through loss right now and trying to figure out where to turn, how to deal with grief. And I reached out to Jean many, many months ago, because I think most of the world knows about your son's story. And I'm just so inspired by you and your family. I watched the documentary called Jim on HBO. And to my audience, if you have not seen it, I really am hoping that you rent it, or if you have HBO, you watch it, because I'm pretty convinced that your son was a saint. And they say that only the good die young. And my father died really young, and I believe he was a saint as well. And I think sometimes that people are supposed to be upstairs with God. Like, there's reasons why we lose people so young, and why they're here, and why they're, you know, why they die early. So I just wanted to say again, thank you.
It's my pleasure, Megan. It truly is. Thank you.
So I just wanted to ask you, going back to when, you know, he was originally kidnapped or held hostage in Libya. He loved what he did. He was a freelance journalist. He made very little money, but it was something that he was very passionate and dedicated to doing. How long was he held in captivity the very first time that he was held?
The very first time, it was only 6 weeks. It was a brief captivity, horrific at the time, however, because we didn't know how long it would last. But the first time, his kidnapping was witnessed by a New York Times journalist. So we knew who had captured him, and we had an idea of where he was. So we had much more information that first time. And however, the way he came home was truly miraculous. It was thanks to a friend, David Bradley, owner of Atlantic Media, who helped get Teach for America research group together. And they found a young woman from Vermont, of all places, who had worked for one of Gaddafi's sons. And it was through that connection that she was able to persuade one of Gaddafi's sons to release Jim and his colleagues. So it was truly a random kind of miraculous connection that made that happen.
And then when he came home, I know that you said you just felt like he didn't feel like he should be there. He wanted to kind of go out again, and you were all so worried about him wanting to leave. Is that accurate?
Oh, yes. I mean, he was very physically well, but he was restless. He really was very restless. And I think it's hard to come out of a conflict zone where you're seeing a lot of trauma, death, torture, really, some of the sad things that were happening to civilians, and then come to our bubble of middle-class America, you know, to come home. So he was very restless to return, But before he returned, he did a gratitude trip, if you will, had many dear friends from Marquette University, Teach for America, Medill, and visited many, many of these friends that summer, and then did work editing for Global Post in Boston before he went back in the fall.
I remember seeing in the documentary that he was somebody that could just sleep anywhere. He could could sleep in the conflict zones. Then when he was coming back, he, like you said, was restless. He wasn't sleeping at night. He was in that editor position and wasn't really somebody that felt like they could be sitting at a desk. So you think his calling, he had this calling that he was supposed to go back. What was that like? I know they touch on it in the documentary, for your family. I mean, I know one of your sons was very angry. How did you feel? Did you feel betrayed? Were you terrified? Because this time he was going into a new and worse situation. So what was that like, knowing that you really couldn't stop him?
Well, as a parent, we all know that our children grow up and they're not ours. They belong mm-hmm. to the world, and we all get to choose what we choose to do. We were happy that Jim had found journalism, really, because it enabled him to put together his care for the underdog, with his ability to tell stories, to witness to what was happening. And so he really loved it. And whenever John or I tried to dissuade him from returning, he said, "Ma, I found my passion. This is something I really need to do. Americans need to know what's happening in the Middle East, need to know how people there yearn for the freedom we just take for granted." So he was very committed to it. And we were sobered by his need to return, obviously, but there was no dissuading him. There really wasn't. We just had to put him in God's hands as he returned.
I loved that he felt like that calling, and the way that when I saw him interviewing in the video clips, like the way he could connect with other human beings, it's a real gift. Don't you agree that he was able to do that?
Yes.
And he was so handsome, such a handsome guy.
He was a good friend. He was a lot of fun. He loved people. He knew how to pick friends, Megan. He was very good at bringing the best out of people and finding people who had that goodness deep within. And even though he had a very diverse group of friends, but he was very friendly, had a lot of colleagues, a lot of friends, loved children, loved life in many ways, Megan.
Well, Jean said to me when we were talking about him, she said he was somebody that was so funny, and he's one of the only people I've ever met in life that never said a bad thing about somebody else. He always was positive. He was always kind. He always had like a kind word for other people. And as the story and the documentary unfolded, you really see that, like, what a support system he was for other people, even in the darkest times. So,
well, like I said, he was a lot of fun. He loved to make people laugh. So he would love to dress up in a silly way, or some of the hostages who return talk about him putting a pair of pants on his head just to be silly. I mean, Jim, you know, really thought humor was important, and did have the gift of seeing the goodness in others. So, but, you know, to be honest, Megan, I don't know if I really realized how much of a gift he was. He was kind of a gentle guy in another way, and not real big on himself. He kind of fit in really easily with a group of people, too.
Well, not to skip ahead, but when he was taken hostage for the second time, And then he was put in that, what do you want to call it? Like a prison, that the room that they show in the documentary with the other 15, he was by himself with John, the other American hostage, but then the other hostages. I found one of the most amazing things about him that really hit me was when he gave his pair of pants to the other hostage. Like they had so little, and he gave the little that he had to help somebody else, which just really shows what kind of human he was. I mean, it was just like, I think sometimes when people are gone, we say they were a saint, but I really believe that people are saints and there's reasons why they're not here anymore. But that was something that really touched me about him, that while he was in that prison, all of the other prisoners that were interviewed talk about, you know, how they all played that game with the, I don't know what it was, the Risk. Pieces of dates.
Okay. Risk. Yeah.
Is that what it, okay.
And yes,
like
it was
that they found like fun and they found compassion and love for each other. And they always turned to him in the darkest times. You know, one of the interviews with one of the prisoners talks about how he always knew that he was in his corner and had the best intentions. And I, that's something that really struck me considering what kind of position they were in at that time, being held hostage, being tortured, all of the horrible things they were going through.
Yes. I really, in hearing some of those stories from the other hostages, first of all, I was very grateful that he was with other good men mm-hmm. who were fellow journalists and aid workers, also men of deep goodness, really. So that was a blessing for Jim to be with such great people. And it also made me realize that our prayers were being answered, his own prayers, because I think God was with them and close to Jim and comforting Jim. It makes me feel that God was very present to him. And because we need to feel love to be able to share and be kind. And that was reassuring to me that Jim did not feel alone. He knew we were all praying for him. He was surrounded by a lot of good people too. And their companionship also provided tremendous strength to him. I'm sure.
So once he passed in the way that he passed so tragically, which by the way, for my listeners, I'm not going to talk about that. If you would like to look it up, you can look up the James Foley. I really want to hear about what the process was like for you and your family, which by the way, I loved watching how close your family is, how important it is when you go through the grieving process to lean on family and how fortunate you are to have such a tight family because so many people go through things and they don't have that. So the foundation of your family, I just wanted to ask you, I know, I'm sorry to like ask you the tough questions, but what it was like once the news media kind of like went away, which I'm sure they were there for a long time and that was hard on top of everything else. What was the grieving process like for you? And I'm asking you this because I think the most important things that we can do as human beings in life is supporting other people, especially within the grieving process. So whether it be spirituality, I know that you're very religious, you believe in God. What was the grieving process like for you? And how are you in that process? I think as a parent, you're probably always going to be grieving your child.
Well, it's, you know, anyone who has experienced any loss, be it loss of health or a loved one, or there are so many losses in life, loss of a marriage, a child, that void is always there. But I also feel that God is there, and God was definitely there for me, for us, and sent us many angels. So yes, our family was very comforted by many of Jim's huge circle of friends, for one thing, and just strangers who appeared and really became huge comforts to us, huge pillars of strength, if you will, people to lean on who listened and cared and helped us grieve with Jim, grieved with us, and then helped us establish the James Foley Legacy Foundation. So God sent us many angels. We were not alone. And I think it's important to look around when you're grieving and ask for help, because there are good people around who want to help. Sometimes we need to ask, and we need to ask God and the people in our midst for the help we need. I certainly needed help, and I needed the hearts and shoulders of so many people to help us through this. And I know our family did too.
Do you believe, I always ask this every interview, do you believe in signs? And if so, what are some of the signs that you know that he's with you?
Well, I think the biggest signs for me are really manifestations of the Holy Spirit. So to mm-hmm. me, the Holy Spirit comes about for me primarily through good people showing up in my life. You know, coming across good people like Jeannie McHugh, like yourself, people who care and want to hear the stories and want to know what happened, but also want to know about how good God is, if we but ask. God has provided for me. He's provided friendship, faith, hope, and strength, really, through our church, through family and friends, people and strangers. Many strangers have shown up and offered help out of the blue, truly, Megan. It's extraordinary. And that's where I feel God's presence, Jim's presence, without a doubt.
And also, he was obviously spiritual and religious. They talk about in the documentary how he went and prayed, you know, and he was actually praying to God. And I believe you talk about in the documentary how he really leaned on God in his darkest times.
He did. Jim was not always religious. I mean, he grew up in the Roman Catholic Church. He was an altar mm-hmm. boy. But he was very normal. He did his duty and then was off doing his thing. So I didn't find him particularly religious as a child. But as he mm-hmm. grew up, he grew more interested in spirituality. I think his undergraduate alma mater, Marquette, definitely, their motto is make a difference, be the difference. And I think Jim came to understand that Marquette University bordered on a very poor part of Milwaukee, and they encouraged students to go into the inner city and volunteer to tutor and such, which Jim did. And I think his eyes were open in many ways to a world he had not grown up in, and it really helped him grow and recognize that, you know, we need to help one another, and that others do not, not everyone grows up in the same way as he had. So he grew at Marquette, and he came to understand that we all need to care about one another.
Do you think that that's really why he felt like he needed to do, like, do you think he got the bug of like wanting to be a journalist and helping others and getting their stories out at Marquette?
Well, I think Marquette definitely inspired him to do for others. Right after he graduated, he went into Teach for America and was involved uh-huh. teaching in the inner city in Phoenix, Arizona for 5 years. So he really saw the struggles of kids who come to school without breakfast, without a parent who is available for them. He really saw a different side of America, and that touched him very much. And I think it definitely solidified any aspiration to do for others, to make a difference.
We all go through periods in our life where we, you know, walk away from our faith, come back, maybe change our mind about spirituality. But I think I'm going to shift a little bit and talk to you about the hostage crisis that's still going on. And I was hoping that you could touch on that because I know how knowledgeable you are just dealing with what you dealt with when you were trying to get him out. So can you touch on that a little bit and what, like where we are with the hostage situation right now? And like, because I don't think people know, I know I don't know. So I would really like to know.
I did not either. I had no clue that hostage taking was such a prevalent criminal act. I mean, I didn't realize that it's, you know, pirates, terrorists, criminal gangs, but also rogue governments find it very expedient to drum up some bogus charges against U.S. nationals who are traveling for business, journalism, aid workers, educators, and arrest them. I had no idea. And when we first went through this, our government really had no one who was in charge of bringing Jim home, if you will. I was shuffled between FBI and State Department, you know, went to the White House one or two times, never met the president, but felt at least heard, but nothing happened. Jim was really not a priority in 2012 to 2014. And it was very sobering, very upsetting when the world was shocked by the brutality of the ISIS fighters in the way they executed our son Jim and the other three Americans. It was shocking to our country, to us, horrifying. And so within 3 weeks of Jim's death, we established the James Foley Foundation to advocate for other U.S. nationals who were held hostage abroad. I had no idea how many there were. Now we realize it. The number ranges around 200 U.S. nationals are taken hostage or unjustly detained around the world annually. So currently we know of about 50 plus public cases. Many of the cases, they're on our website, foleyfoundation.org. They're in all parts of the world. We have Americans held in Russia, Venezuela, Niger, Iran, Mali. It just is frightening when you hear some of these stories. And many of the people who are held hostage have been held for many years. Austin Tice of Texas, very promising journalist, wonderful young man, ex-Marine, was taken in August of 2012 and is still being held in Syria. Psychologist Maj Kamalmaz also held there. We just have so many instances. Pastor Jeffrey Woodke held in Africa. He had ministered to the people in Niger for most of his life. And then some terrorist group kidnapped him for ransom. So we just have so many, many cases that I was totally unaware of.
Does the foundation help with, like, what exactly does the foundation do to help these hostages?
Well, we work with Congress, with our government, okay, with the Hostage Fusion Cell, Special Envoy for Hostage Affairs, and the White House to prioritize the return of Americans. It is difficult. When people get a hold of one of our citizens, they know they have a political pond, if you will. So it can be very difficult to find ways to negotiate. In the past, our government was not sure they wanted to negotiate with terrorists to bring our people home. But you see what happened. They were killed, whereas the other Western hostages, in fact, did come home because their governments engaged with their captors. Our government would not engage, nor would the British. And that's why they all died. They were all killed.
So do you think too, I mean, that the amount of money and like you taking like second mortgages or whatever you were doing on your home, asking for $100 million. At that point, you were working with the FBI. You weren't getting anywhere, but the other countries were willing to engage. So they were, is that why they were able to get them out?
Oh, definitely. There's no way you're going to find out what captors want if you don't engage with them, you know. And the problem was our government's hands were tied. FBI and State Department were not allowed to engage with Jim's captors. So for the month we were in touch with them, we as a family had to try to do it. And we had no idea what we were doing. We certainly didn't have the means to raise that kind of a ransom or release prisoners. That's often what they ask for. So there's a need to begin at least to connect with whoever takes our citizens, if only to get information about people who have nefarious goals in mind, if they can get a hold of an American citizen. So I feel it's essential that our government prioritize the return of U.S. nationals. But it isn't always a priority, Megan.
Has it improved since Jim's passing?
I like to think that it's evolving. There is, last December of 2020, the Robert Levinson Hostage Taking and Accountability Act was passed, named for Robert A. Levinson, a former FBI agent who was kidnapped, held captive, and died in captivity. His amazing family pushed in Congress to make into law this fusion cell that we now have, a multidisciplinary fusion cell, this envoy at the State Department, and the hostage recovery group at the White House. So we have a structure and the responsibility for these entities to bring Americans home. However, if they are not empowered by the current president, that is not always a priority. And that's part of the problem, Megan. So we still have plenty of work to do. It's hard. We have a lot of challenges as a country, domestically and internationally. And sometimes the return of individual citizens is not a priority. So that's why we keep fighting. That's our goal.
Yeah. Yeah. But, as far as ISIS and where ISIS is now, and I believe you just had one of the captors was tried. Is that correct?
One of two of the British jihadists who kidnapped Jim and tortured him and finally executed him, two of them were extradited to the United States last year. And one of them, Alexander Cody, pleaded guilty to all 8 counts. And so he has pleaded guilty in a hearing. His colleague, El Sheikh, is still due to go on trial in January of 2022.
And were you there during what was... What was that like?
I
know it must have been horrible.
Well, it was rather chilling because Alexander was very nonchalant and, unemotional about what he had done. He was very matter of fact about, yes, he had done it. And he wanted to make clear that he was confessing to doing it because he didn't want to publicly have to implicate his colleague, El Sheikh, during the trial in January. And he also hopes to return to the United Kingdom in 15 years if he cooperates. So those were some of the terms of why he agreed to confess to kidnapping and torturing the Americans.
Was your entire family there?
Oh, two of Jim's brothers were, and my husband and I were there, as well as the Mueller's, Cassock's, and Sotloff families. So the other families were there.
So what kind of feelings did that bring up? Was it sadness? Was it anger? I mean, that must have been really hard to have somebody be so nonchalant when they, you know, when you adult, you've been dealing with so much pain since the 2014.
Well, yes. I mean, a lot of gratitude to our government. The prosecuting attorneys have been so amazing, so kind, so diligent about building a case against these gentlemen, these men, so that they would, in fact, be held accountable. So we felt a lot of gratitude to them. It was chilling to hear him, you know, and pitiful, really. That a human being would not really show any emotion in confessing that, yes, he in fact did those heinous crimes. So it was, that part was kind of anticlimactic. It was kind of like, how could a human being act like that? But
it doesn't make any sense to me, to be honest. As far as the foundation, if people would want to get involved and, you know, as Americans do something, because it's like one of those things where I watched and, you know, at one point during the documentary, you talked about raising $1 million and you thought, you know, things were, he was going to get out and, but then it didn't turn out that way. People don't understand like how to deal with these kind of situations. They don't really want to think about it because it's so scary and overwhelming. How can just a American citizen, just a regular person, get involved and help?
Well, we have several ways. We have a large group. As a matter of fact, I'm wearing my Freedom Run t-shirt from a few years ago. In a couple of weeks on October 23rd, we will have our 7th annual Foley Run. It's called the James Foley Freedom Run. We'll do it in person in New Hampshire, but we'll do it virtually all over the world and the United States. So anyone who would like to receive a Foley Run t-shirt, make a difference for others, Americans who are held captive, and for journalist safety, which we also promote through our curricula, I would invite anyone. They can go to foleyrun.org and make a donation. They can do a virtual walk or run in the name of Americans who are held captive, and it would make a difference. It always makes a difference to care about others. So that is certainly an important way they could help.
So I'm asking my listeners to please go on foleyrun.org and in light of buying me a buttery Chardonnay, this is a joke, Diane, on my website, I have buy me a buttery Chardonnay. I would like you to please donate to the foleyrun.org. I think that this cause is so important. I believe I had an interview last week where I spoke to somebody that was in the had been sex trafficked, and I had no idea. I had no idea that the things that happen in this country happen. I feel so naive, you know, and I think it's the same thing with the hostage situation. We just kind of like live in our little bubble. We go to the mall, we shop, we go to restaurants. Our country is, there's so much turmoil, so much like horrible things going on right now, but it's like, we just have blinders on and it's too overwhelming to think about it. So if you take like small little steps, like I'm going to donate to this organization. I'm going to make a difference. Like, we all as human beings and people, instead of us all fighting with each other over wearing a mask and ridiculous things that people are fighting over right now, like, do something, make a difference, do something to help somebody else. There's hostages, there's parents and siblings watching the documentary, just seeing the pain of your sons and your daughter and your daughter-in-law. Like, he was taken away and, you know, he's not in this world anymore, when our government could have done just different things and we all could have done different things to help. But we all choose to kind of say, oh, that's so sad, and leave our blinders on instead of just doing one small thing. So I need to get off my pulpit right now, because I tend to do that quite a bit, but I really just wanted to say that. I wanted to ask, and I'm not going to take up too much more of your time, how you all are doing today. How are his brothers doing? His sister-in-law, his sister, how are you and your husband doing? I just wanted to check in on that.
Well, thank you for asking, Megan. But we're blessed. We have a rich, wonderful family. Jim has four other siblings. We have six grandchildren. The seventh is on the way. We all gather in October to remember Jim. That was his birth month. And we all have fun walking and running together in remembrance of Jim and other Americans, other heroes who have laid down their life so that we're free. As a matter of fact, one of Jim's last things when he returned from Libya was he spoke at Marquette and said that he aspired to be a man of moral courage. So we try to instill that in all the students and the young people we work with, to try to do, as you said, Megan, that little small thing for someone else, and to dare to do the right thing when it's not easy to do, because your goodness and courage is needed in the world today, without a doubt. So needed.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, I am so happy to hear that you all are plugging along. I really, when I watch the documentary, I keep saying when I watch the documentary, yeah, we know I watched the documentary, but I wanted to say I wanted to spend Christmas in your house because I didn't have that growing up. And, it looks like your family still is so close, and there's lots of laughter. And you said that Jim was funny, and, you know, to be like, I believe that laughter is one of my greatest powers, my greatest gift, that I love to make people laugh and I love to laugh. And I just, I'm amazed by people that can pick themselves up and continue to like work through life, even the hardest challenges like you've gone through, and continue to laugh and continue to lean on family and not let their family break apart like a lot of people that can happen to. So I just find you and your family extremely inspiring. I was so nervous for this interview today. I'm never nervous to talk to anyone. Like, I talk to people on like buses. I mean, I'm never on a bus. What am I talking about? I talk to everyone though. And I just find you just an amazing light. And I wanted to thank you so much for taking your time to talk to me and share what you're doing and how people can get involved again. One last time, can you give the information again for your website?
Our website is the jamesfoleyfoundation.org, and the run page is foleyrun.org.
Okay. And then there's a social media, there's an Instagram as well that I'm going to post on my show notes that I just started following for the Foley Foundation. So I followed that as well. So
lovely.
I'm sure people can follow that and get involved and ask questions that way.
Oh, wonderful.
In closing, thank you so much, Diane. It's such an honor and a privilege to meet you. And I'm hoping one day that I can meet you in person with
my wonderful
friend, Jean.
God bless you, Megan. Thank you for caring.
Thank you. In closing, keep living, keep praying, and keep growing.
Thank you, Megan. God bless you.
buddy. Have you heard of Instacart? If you have not heard of Instacart, I don't know where you have been living because it saved my life. I don't have to go to the grocery store. I can get my stuff delivered to my house. And if you go to judgingmegan.com/Instacart, you will get $35 off of your first order if you've never ordered before. So I would say get on there right now and skip your trip to the grocery store.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Swimsuit? Check. Sunscreen? Check. Phone charger? Check. Don't forget to pack the 5-Hour Energy. It fits great in a pocket or carry-on, and the alert feeling will help you arrive ready for anything. Now get 20% off when you use code 5HETRAVEL at 5HOURENERGY.com. Expires April 30th. One-time use only. Not valid with other discounts. Remember, visit 5HOURENERGY.com and use code 5HETRAVEL to save 20%.